The first reading is from Russell Green. It's too much to hold, and so we blink and move on back to gradualism, clinging to the false hope that somehow what it is that we always have done will work this time. It's our own type of denial. No, certainly not denial like the Republican climate deniers, but nonetheless, a dangerous denial. We must step inside. We can and must rise to this moment. Imagine your children's lives. Step inside that. Become your child. Not today, but in 30 or 40 years. And as your child, ask yourself, Mom, Dad, what happened? Why didn't you do something? Can you step into that? And can you stay there? Because if you do, if we do, if we step into that truth and stay there, we'll know what to do. And the second reading is from the 10th chapter of Mark. As he was traveling along the way, someone ran up, knelt before him, and started questioning him. Good teacher, what do I have to do to inherit everlasting life? Jesus said to him, Why do you call me good? No one is good except God alone. You know the commandments. You shall not murder, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not steal, you shall not give false testimony, you shall not defraud, and you shall honor your father and mother. He said to him, Teacher, I have observed all these things since I was a child. Jesus looked at him and loved him and said to him, You are missing one thing. Make your move. Sell whatever you have, and give the money to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. And then, come on, follow me. But stunned by this advice, he went away dejected, since he had a fortune. After looking around, Jesus says to his disciples, How difficult it is for those with money to enter God's empire. The disciples were amazed at his words. In response, Jesus says again, Children, how difficult it is to enter God's empire. It's easier for a camel to squeeze through the eye of a needle than for the wealthy to get into God's empire. And they were totally amazed, saying to each other, "Well then, who can be saved?" Jesus looks them in the eye and says, "For humans, it's impossible, but not for God. You see, everything's possible for God." Peter began telling him, look at us. We left everything to follow you. Jesus said, "Let me tell you, there is no one who has left home or brothers or sisters or mother or father or children or farms on my account and on account of the good news who won't receive 100 times as much now in the present time, homes and brothers and sisters and mothers and children and farms, including persecutions, and in the age to come, eternal life. Many of the first will be last, and many of the last will be first."
Before I get into the sermon itself, I just wanted to let you know that, yes, I am actually leaving, inshallah, Thursday. Go to L.A., and then Istanbul, and then Najaf, Iraq. I'm with a tour group called Caravan 72, so it's a large number of us going together to do different things. And part of that whole tour, of course, is the pilgrimage itself, the 80 kilometers from Najaf to Karbala, and all along the way seeing all of those amazing adventures. So I'm very excited about this, very curious. And I hope to be able to come back and represent the voices there. That's my intent. My intent is to go and to hear what the folks who are on this pilgrimage have to say, what they are doing, what their faith means to them, what their lives mean to them. It's a part of the country, a part of the world, I should say, that I don't know very much about at all. But it's in a very important part of the world. All parts are, but they're a very significant part of this. And so that's what I come back. And so I do thank you for your prayers. I will try the update as best I can via probably my Facebook page or something, and then we'll see where it goes from there. So you can get updates about what's happening. And then when we come back, hopefully have something to show you. And so It's with great gratitude and a great opportunity, and I see that as all of us participating together, and so I thank you for that. And it kind of relates to this topic I'm talking about today, of the different things that we need to do in our time. And one of those, I think, is to really reach across a lot of boundaries. It was around 3 in the morning, about 12 years ago, April or May 2006, that I woke up sobbing. Sobbing with terror and grief, fear. And it was actually a movie, a documentary, that broke me open and shattered my illusions. The film is called The End of Suburbia, and it documented a time in history called peak oil. Peak oil, on the global scale, is when the rate of extraction and production of oil peaks and then begins to decline permanently. And there are a few tricks that can extend the rate of extraction, such as deep sea drilling, drilling in the Arctic, fracking, and so forth. But those who are in the know, featured in that film, and those who I have followed since then, show that those solutions are not solutions. They are illusions. And we have likely plateaued at around 20 million barrels of oil a day. We can consider the ramifications of that in terms of remaining oil reserves and who will control them and how they will be controlled as the global human population continues to rise. The solution chosen by the banks and the military and the media is war. And we've been at it now for 17 years. We live and move and have our being in petroleum and have for about the last 100 years, which isn't long. In the span of 2 to 3 million year human history. But long enough to increase human population from the time my father, who is still living and was born 100 years ago, when the human population was about 1.5 billion, to over 7 billion today. And this upward curve in human population is directly proportional to the upward curve in petroleum extraction and consumption. What happens when our energy source peaks, as it has, and then declines? What happens socially? How will we manage this as a species, equitably? And then, of course, there is the United States. The United States consumes about 25% of the world's oil and has 5% of the population. If everyone on the planet consumed at the rate of the average American, we would need 4 to 5 planets of resources. And I knew all of that, and I knew that for some time. But after I watched the film, The End of Suburbia, nodding my head, I showed it to my church. In fact, it was a church member who initially showed it to me. But at some point in the middle of the night, after having watched it several times, 3 in the morning, as I said, I was broken open. And I woke up sobbing. Sobbing for the end of my world, the end of our world. Sobbing for the end of what I had inherited and ingested and believed and promoted as humanity's dream, onward and upward forever. We were getting smarter, and our technology was so amazing, it can only get better with a future of flying cars and space stations. I began to realize that this is not so much our future, but a blip in time, the brief rise and fall of petroleum man. Now we know the other end, the environmental end, the climate change end, the effects of waste of petroleum man's incessant growth that has decimated half the population of Earth's species in the last 50 years. And it was because of this that I started my blog, Shuck and Jive. And for a while, I researched this and wrote about it. But it isn't easy competing with the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal and ABC and NBC and NPR and all the mainstream myth makers. I realize now that the mainstream media really are little more than megaphones for the banks. And even at this late hour, they still tell us to keep buying stuff. And they show us the latest techie gizmo and scold and censor the radicals who are trying to tell us to end this insanity of growth, to get off fossil fuels now, and to change our lives completely. Now, if you think differently, that's fine. There's a writer I like, Caitlin Johnston, who is from Australia, and she has on her Twitter bio, "You will disagree with me sometimes. That's okay." But even when the truth sneaks through and people begin to awaken to what is real, like the laws of physics and biology, and realize that humans are not exempt from these laws, the mainstream media distract us. They put us back to sleep with the babble of so-called laws of economics. They blather on over the latest doings of Donald Trump or the most recent squabble between the two U.S. political parties, neither of which tells the truth, neither of which stops the $1 trillion-a-year war machine, neither of which offers a vision of life beyond happy motoring. Kathleen Dean Moore, who was here a couple of weeks ago, quoted from Daniel Quinn's book, Ishmael. Has any of you ever read this book, Daniel Quinn, Ishmael? There's a hand. Suggested reading list book. And when she mentioned that, I remembered, oh, I've got that on my shelf. Most of my books on my shelf I haven't read, if you're asking. They're there, they're for reference. Somehow I go by the spirit. They get collected and read when they're needed. And I collected this one a while ago, and then I read it. It was written about 20 years ago. Daniel Quinn actually died just this past spring. Ishmael, in the book, in the novel, is a gorilla. And he speaks to the protagonist telepathically. And he teaches him like Socrates would teach. And ultimately, it's a book about the fateful turn that human beings made somewhere around 10,000 years ago, when they got the idea that they were closer to the gods than to the gorillas and were no longer subject to the laws of life. But it's a hopeful book because it invites those who are awake or who have the potential to awaken to stay awake and to stay with what is real, even if we have to sob our way through it. Now our scripture reading from the lectionary, Mark chapter 10. So this guy comes up to Jesus And he asks him about everlasting life. How do I get the good life? How do we get back to the garden? And Jesus says, well, you know the rules. And the guy said, yeah, well, I've done all that. I got a college degree, and I read the New York Times, and I recycle, and I vote, and I give to charity. And Jesus looked at him with love, because what else can you do? This is going to be rough for everyone, and we will have to love each other fiercely through all of this. Jesus says, dude, you got to give it all up. You have to unplug from the machine that is killing you and all of life on this planet. And then join up with this happy band of rebels. We're going to save the world. But the man couldn't do it. He was too invested in the illusion. That's how I read that little parable now. People say when they hear people like Kathleen Dean Moore, who spoke here a couple of weeks ago, talk about the reality of the end of industrial civilization, they say, well, what can we do? She tries to be nice. She tries to say it in funny and clever ways, artistic ways. But in the end, the message is really the same. There's nothing you can do to make that illusion real. There's nothing we can do to save this unsustainable way of life. However, there is a lot you can do to live through these present and coming days as a helpful force rather than as a hindrance. And here are some things you can do. Seven of them. I just picked out seven. One, try to be as healthy as possible. Physically healthy, mentally healthy, spiritually healthy. Two, if you are in debt, get out of debt and do not get into further debt. Little exists that is worth borrowing to possess. Right now, we need to use what we have. Unplug from the illusion of growth. Learn. Read those who the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal and the Washington Post calls conspiracy theorists. Read those websites that the big social media platforms are now purging. Four, stay unplugged. Even if you cannot change your style of life right away, stay unplugged mentally and spiritually. Know that you will be needed when the time comes. Five, don't worry about what your friends think. Love them as you can, but always refer to your moral compass. Six, grieve the loss. Sob as you need to, but stay awake and be open for creativity. Don't turn away because it's depressing or scary. Stay with it. Think of our children 40 years from now, as the reading said. Trust that sanity may yet prevail and that you will have a role in our transformation. Seven, have fun. This is the most important adventure of your life. Don't miss it. And I'll close with the words of the late, great Molly Ivins. Keep fighting for freedom and justice, beloveds, but don't forget to have fun doing it. Be outrageous. Rejoice in all the oddities that freedom can produce. And when you get through celebrating the sheer joy of a good fight, be sure to tell those who come after how much fun it was.